Is it possible for the Apostle Paul to teach the doctrine of faith alone without using the words faith alone? Find out in my column in the Latest Issues Etc. Journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Katie Price Vogel writes about her journey from the false assurance of works in Roman Catholicism to the true assurance of Jesus' accomplished work in the Lutheran Confession. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
I am not a bounty hunter. I've heard otherwise. I know that you sit on the throne of your former employer.
Jabba ruled with fear. I intend to rule with respect.
That is part of the trailer for the Disney Plus TV series, The Book of Boba Fett, yet another incarnation of the Star Wars universe. We'll be reviewing it here with Pastor Ted Geese in the first half hour of Issues Etc. If you don't know who Boba Fett is, well, Pastor Geese is ready to tell you everything you ever wanted to know about that, well, otherwise minor Star Wars character. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll do that review of the Book of Boba Fett with Pastor Geese. Then Elaine Donnelly joins us of the Center for Military Readiness. We'll discuss a report on extremism in the U.S. military. Dr. Michael New will be alongside from National Review Online. There's a Los Angeles Times op-ed that wants to teach us a lesson about what we can learn from Stalin's abortion ban. Then Bill McKeever will be alongside. We'll be talking with him about Mormonism as a global religion. There's a recent article in The Economist asking the question whether or not Mormonism can go global. Then it's listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. That email address is talkback@issuesetc.org. And the comment line for your use anytime, any place, 618-223-8382. Joining us to review the Disney Plus TV series, The Book of Boba Fett, Pastor Ted Geese. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He is pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he teaches a course for Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary titled A Lutheran Approach to Art, Media, and Film. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
Okay, first, let's personalize it. What were your expectations going into this latest incarnation of Disney's version of the Star Wars universe?
All of these kinds of things now you have to keep really low expectations. That's probably the best way to go. But they already kind of primed the pump with the expectations, I guess, because they had introduced this character again during the second season of The Mandalorian. And to kind of get ready for all of it, I mean, I could have just dived right in, but my wife, Michelle, she was like, let's watch The Mandalorian again. So we kind of plowed through the two seasons of The Mandalorian to get ourselves geared up for The Book of Boba Fett. And the second season, like I said, of The Mandalorian reintroduced this character of Boba Fett. So we kind of had some idea of where we were going to be going with this. And I had, you know, some thoughts about it. And it's 7 episodes long this season. We're just going to talk about the first 3 episodes that are available now. And that's kind of, you know, who knows where the next 4 episodes are going to go.
So where would fans of the movies, where would they go to find the character Boba Fett?
Yeah, so the character of Boba Fett, they would have, it depends how deep in the weeds of Star Wars fandom you were back in the day. So you may have come across the character of Boba Fett back during something, kind of a really terrible thing that was on television. It was a different time. There was the Star Wars holiday special in 1978. So back in 1978, like stuff like the Smothers Brothers and the Sonny and Cher show and Carol Burnett and all of this, like the variety show was a big deal back then. So the Star Wars holiday special was something that was produced for television based on the success of the original Star Wars film back in 1977. George Lucas didn't really have a lot to do with it, and then afterwards he kind of tried to make it vanish. But at any rate, that's where that character of Boba Fett first would have been interacted with, or like the viewing audience would have first run across the character of Boba Fett then. So he would have been in this little cartoon. There was a cartoon section where he was, you know, kind of helped out Luke Skywalker or whatever. But he's sort of an enigmatic character. And then in 1980, most people would have came probably in contact with the character in The Empire Strikes Back, where he shows up as a bounty hunter who is one of a number of bounty hunters that Darth Vader uses to try to track down the rebellion individuals, the Rebel Alliance and Princess Leia and all of the rest of it, right? So he's involved in that. And then we discover that he also is a bounty hunter working for Jabba the Hutt. And then in the Return of the Jedi film in 1983, then he unceremoniously, kind of in a weird sort of almost accident, gets his jetpack kind of jostled and he flies into the side of this big sand barge and then falls into this thing called the Sarlacc Pit, which is a big monster that slowly digests people. It just sits in the, or whatever falls into its gaping mouth. And that was pretty much it. And then after that, people wondered, well, whatever happened to that character? Did he ever escape? And then there were some books that were written, you know, in the 90s, in the early 2000s. Disney purchases Star Wars from Lucasfilm. They kind of erase all of those books and reintroduce the character in a couple different places. I guess George Lucas himself also had the character back in one of the prequel films, The Attack of the Clones, in 2002, and that's where he's introduced as a little child. So he is the genetic clone of a character named Jango Fett, who's also one of these Mandalorians with the helmet. And you are introduced to him as a little child. That's a lot of the places. He also shows up in the Clone Wars television, kind of a computer animated television series. So he's kind of all over the place. He's in a lot of spots. He's a very popular character. Mostly up until about 2002, you never saw his face. He was always a helmeted character that, you know, was a bounty hunter, very tough and a dangerous individual.
So he is a bounty hunter in that canon of Star Wars. What's a Mandalorian and is he one?
So within this whole kind of big, it's a space opera, right? So one of the planets is this place called Mandalore. There are these kind of tough warriors. They all have these masks that kind of look like they're Spartans. Like they're kind of like based on like Greek soldiers kind of the past. And they have a code and they're like tough fighters. But they also have this practice of taking foundlings, like, you know, lost children, and bringing them up as their own. So the character of Jango Fett, Boba Fett's father, is a foundling who then has a clone of himself made that he can raise as his own son. So kind of technically not a Mandalorian, but somebody who's adopted into the Mandalorian kind of way, as it were. And Jango Fett, the father of Boba Fett, describes himself as a man making his way in the universe kind of a thing. And Boba Fett has taken on this same sort of approach to everything. So he's sort of the Venn diagram of Mandalorian. He's like one circle kind of overlaps into the Mandalorian thing because of his armor and his history of being kind of like this clone of a foundling. But he's sort of his own guy, if that makes any sense. Also, a part of the story of him as a character is that his father, this Jango Fett, is the individual they clone, all of the clone army for the Empire is cloned off of him. So that's part of it. A lot of these details kind of get fleshed out in that Attack of the Clones, the Clone Wars cartoon, and in the second season of The Mandalorian.
Just to make that connection with The Mandalorian, Boba Fett appears in this, am I right, the second season?
Second season, yeah.
What's his quest? What's he doing? And how does that tie into this series that focuses on him?
Well, in that second season of The Mandalorian, he shows up as a guy who looks like he's wandered out of the desert of Tatooine with a gaffy stick and he wants his armor. He doesn't have his armor. Now, when you're watching that second season of The Mandalorian, the dramatic irony is, as the viewer, if you're really into all of this, you realize that the character of the Mandalorian has managed to, along the way, pick up the armor that belongs to Boba Fett. These Jawas had found this guy laying around and took his armor off of him and sold it to somebody else or gave it to somebody else. And eventually the Mandalorian got it. And now he wants that armor back. And that's how he got introduced again in second season of Mandalorian. So then the question is, what is going to happen after all of that? So at the very, very end of the Mandalorian second season, in the post-credit sequence, they have him showing up at Jabba's palace, Jabba the Hutt. This crime lord has died, and he just kind of walks in, and the guy who's sitting on the throne, he kills him, this Bib Fortuna, and then he takes and sits down on the throne himself and kind of declares himself the new crime boss for that area of the whatever, however big that crime syndicate is. And that's kind of where you start with this particular show, the Book of Boba Fett, is how does he get to that point? What happens when he gets there? What happens next, essentially, is what the first three episodes of this show are kind of unpacking.
The Force was a big part of the Mandalorian storyline. Is it a part of the Boba Fett storyline?
No, not really. There is nothing to do with the Force whatsoever in this show, which is kind of interesting and good on its own, because the whole idea is that if you have some of these Jedis wandering around the universe doing stuff, most people don't have any interaction with them. So this is kind of the underbelly of society kind of thing, more so. It doesn't have anything to do with it. Now, the problem maybe that this presents for a show like The Book of Boba Fett is that it was a real hook for viewers in The Mandalorian to have that character of Grogu, Baby Yoda, who was A, adorable, B, used the Force, and provided some mystery into the whole unfolding story of The Mandalorian. This is less mysterious. The Force is just not a part of this at all. Like, whether it will be in the future, I imagine they probably will want to somehow link all of this stuff back into this, but at present, the first three episodes, the Force is not part of the show.
Without spoiling too much, what happens so far in the Book of Boba Fett?
I guess I kind of already spoiled one thing, but you kind of already knew that this would be the case, because the last time in Return of the Jedi that you see him is being swallowed by the Sarlacc pit, and clearly he has to get out of it in order to continue to be a character post that point in the story. So this show shows him, using a series of flashbacks, shows how he escapes and then what happens to him immediately afterwards. So like I was saying, you know, like the Sandcrawler comes up, the Jawas come out, they take his armor away, leave him for dead. And then the next thing that happens is the Tusken Raiders, the Sand People, show up and they kind of, I don't know. It's this kind of story that's maybe a little bit like that that movie Little Big Man, or something kind of in the vein of Dances with Wolves, where he's taken on as kind of like kidnapped, as it were, and then slowly he is brought along and taught and kind of adopted by the Tusken Raiders. So there are rituals of rites of passage. He has to prove himself. There is a religious element of it, like we talked about how the Force is not part of this story, but essentially what you get is a kind of generic indigenous spirit quest kind of storyline that includes a spirit animal guide that takes him on a hallucinogenic sort of or actual journey into the wilderness, where he gets a stick from a tree, and then that is turned into his own personal gaffy stick that he uses, that they train him on how to use. So there's that kind of element going on, and that's all kind of told in flashbacks that occur as dreams while he's in a tank that's used to heal him from his general injuries along the way. So then laid alongside of that is basically him trying to get the lay of the land and to impose his rule as the new crime lord on Tatooine. So he has to deal with the local mayor. He's got to deal with, some bureaucratic stuff. He's got to deal with Jabba the Hutt's cousins that want to take the throne away from him. That's all kind of going on. There's assassination attempts against him. Those are the kinds of things that are happening in these first three episodes.
What do you make of the character of Boba Fett in this latest incarnation?
I'm not sold on him myself. I mean, this is going to be different for different people depending on where they came in along the way. So let's say you're a millennial or a Gen Z kid. You may have had your first Star Wars, kind of early Star Wars experiences watching the prequels made by George Lucas. So the Attack of the Clones will be a big part of how you approach the character of Boba Fett. And there he is as a little kid, the son of Jango Fett. So that would be your initial, or part of your initial getting to know the character. For me, being a Gen X guy, or if you were a baby boomer or the silent generation or whatever, the older people that came across the character of Boba Fett back in 1977 and 1978 and 1980 and 1983, well, that character is more dangerous, maybe more mysterious. I guess this is the problem, is that if you have a character that's super dangerous and mysterious, and then you just start to reveal everything about the character, suddenly there's less mystery, right? And if it's been a really long time and people have had their own ideas of what the mystery should be like, then maybe you might be disappointed. So this is why keeping the expectations low is probably a good thing. But the character is being rehabilitated, or he's being given a hero's journey. He's being made into not a villain, and not even really 100% like an anti-hero. He's kind of being developed more into a hero. He's very sensitive. He's maybe more of a community organizer than a crime boss. I don't know exactly how to put my finger on it 100% yet, and I got to give it another four episodes to see where they finally end up going with it. But this is not the same kind of guy, and not that a character can't grow, but he's not the same sort of guy that talks back to Darth Vader, and Darth Vader has to like lay into him pretty good about not disintegrating anybody. This is a little different than that. And I'm not sure if people are going to 100% like the direction that this character is going. Morrison, the guy who's playing the character, he had originally played Jango Fett, the character's clone father, and now he's playing that. He's playing his own clone self now grown up. So he's been playing the role for a long time. He's doing a good job. It's just the question is that the kind of bounty hunter who worked for Jabba the Hutt, who was conscripted by the Empire, is that the same guy? Like, is that? And I think that might be something for older fans of Star Wars. They may have a harder time getting on board with it.
We are reviewing the Disney Plus TV series, The Book of Boba Fett, with Pastor Ted Geese. He teaches a course for Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary titled A Lutheran Approach to Art, Media, and Film. On the other side, do we stay in familiar territory? If you appreciate Issues Etc., our 24/7 music and talk stations, and our daily verse-by-verse Bible study, The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, please include a bequest in your will or trust for these worldwide media resources. Bequests aren't subject to federal tax or capital gains taxes. Ensure your children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren the opportunity to listen by including a bequest in your will or trust for Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever.
Deaconesses are women trained to share the gospel of Jesus Christ through works of mercy, spiritual care, and teaching of the Christian faith. The word deaconess means servant. Find out more on how you can serve in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod through the vocation of deaconess at lcms.org/deaconess. Working in faith, laboring in love, remaining steadfast in the hope of our Lord Jesus Christ. LCMS Deaconess Ministry, lcms.org/deaconess.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
Not everyone is comfortable with new technology. Dial A Podcast gives all generations of your congregation an easy way to hear your sermons, or even devotionals and Bible studies. Once you've completed a simple one-time setup, we take care of the rest. All your congregants have to do is dial the number from any phone to listen to your latest podcast, all at no additional cost to them. Dial A Podcast. Extend the reach of your sermons. Get started at dialapodcast.com now.
Every word of Scripture is really just unpacking how the cross of Christ makes everything so different.
Listen to chapel services live weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Because Christ died for you, you are forgiven.
If you want to dive deep into the New Testament book of James, I recommend to you the Issues, Etc. book of the month for January, the Concordia Commentary on James. One of the features of this commentary, and indeed of all the commentaries in this critical commentary series, is that there are occasional excursus in the book where they describe how the Lutheran confessions and the 16th century reformer Martin Luther use that particular passage or that particular section of the book. It's a great feature of the Issues, Etc. book of the month for January, the Concordia Commentary on James by Dr. Curtis Giese. Find out more about it at our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. We're reviewing the Disney Plus TV series, The Book of Boba Fett. Pastor Ted Giese is our guest. So Ted, does this particular story, does it stay in familiar territory? Does it introduce us to something new in the Star Wars universe?
Well, this is more familiar ground. This is treading over more familiar ground. So just in the general timeline of everything, this is after Return of the Jedi. So it's after the fall of the Empire. The Rebel Alliance is now running the universe or whatever. So this is after all of that, but before The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi, and the Rise of Skywalker. It's before those, the recent Disney films. But because it's all kind of focused on the planet of Tatooine, this is familiar ground. As a viewer, you are getting to see some different parts of the planet. The story is kind of being fleshed out in terms of, like, what is the ecology of the planet? Like, where do people get water from? Like, how do you get water if you don't have technology? What does the daily life of a Tusken Raider like? All of that kind of stuff is being fleshed out in the show. And in fact, like, there's very little dialogue in the first two episodes. You know, a lot of it is just like kind of mundane in some ways. It could be really fascinating to people who enjoy this. But if you are not really into all of it, you might find it kind of a tad boring, perhaps. I don't know. So this is not something completely, you're not getting a new slant on everything. You're getting, and not very much fan service either. Like, they're not really putting in a lot. There's a little bit of stuff that people might recognize from other areas of Star Wars. But generally speaking, it's kind of that familiar Tatooine world. The Palace of Jabba the Hutt plays a big part of all of it. It's kind of a show haunted by the past films.
Is it being produced by Jon Favreau?
Yeah, he's the main guy involved in this. So he's the creator. I think the sixth episode is co-written by Dave Filoni, who's involved in the Clone Wars television series and was also involved in The Mandalorian. And like The Mandalorian, you get different directors for different episodes. So there's a little bit of that going on. Bryce Dallas Howard came back again to do one of the episodes. So it's in the same sort of vein as as The Mandalorian, the same kind of approach to how they're telling the story. It's just a different kind of a story.
I've been fascinated by the fact, did you expect, because Jon Favreau has really amazing career in film and behind the camera before he ever came to The Mandalorian or to the Boba Fett story. Did it surprise you that he turned out to be kind of the best maker of fan fiction Star Wars ever had?
A little bit. I mean, he's a good director. Years ago, I mean, people will know, like, he's made some really amazing movies. So Elf was just a great Christmas movie with Will Ferrell as Buddy the Elf and James Caan. It's a funny, funny movie. So he's got like the comedic kind of end of things all nailed down. And then he goes and makes Iron Man and Iron Man 2. These are great films. Like, and basically he jump starts the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe. So he wasn't very good at, I didn't like The Lion King, and I wasn't a fan of the Jungle Book one really that much. We talked about them along the ways, but he did a great movie called Chef about kind of a father and son and like a food truck and going across the country. That's a really great one. So he has these kind of great skills. If you saw the last Spider-Man movie, he of course is in that movie too. He's because he reprises his role as Happy, connected to the Marvel universe. So he does his own acting, he does producing, and then he does his directing and he does his writing. So he really is involved in like so many different aspects of filmmaking. So he is a really, not just a safe pair of hands, but a accomplished and faithful pair of hands. So this is where it's like, I may not be a big fan of how the first three episodes of The Book of Boba Fett has completely gone. I there's parts about it that I like a lot, but because of a guy like Jon Favreau, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt to see where the next four episodes go and to see what he's going to do with the rest of the story.
Does this yet have what I think The Mandalorian made people fall in love with it? These kind of breakout characters like the I Have Spoken guy, who is really crucial in kind of making sure that the Mandalorian completes a part of his quest. Does Boba Fett have anything like that yet?
There's this Ming-Na Wen. She plays the character of Fennec Shand. She's basically an assassin, and she's like Boba Fett's right-hand man, as it were, this lady. And people will recognize her. She was on a TV show called Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is kind of a Marvel adjacent television show. She was on that from 2013 to 2020. And then she was in a couple episodes, three episodes of The Mandalorian in the first and the second season. So she's probably your best like extra character in all of this. Other than that, there's not like, you get more of her in this. But besides that, I mean, like, they don't really have any standout characters that are really super charming. This is the part of it that's a little more complicated, is that you don't have these like super duper charming characters. There are some actors like Jennifer Beale is in a couple episodes so far, an actress who's been in lots of stuff from the 80s. Danny Trejo, a Mexican actor that people might remember from like Machete and a bunch of like some Tarantino stuff. He's got a little part in it. There's Stephen Root, who's been in lots of different things. He's the man in the high castle. Anyways, they've got some good actors in there, some, you know, and people who have done some great stuff at different points in their career. But it's not, nobody's like emerging. Like that Mandalorian show, like every episode they seem to have a new interesting character. I mean, they had a couple stinkers in there, but for the most part, they had some really great, interesting guys. And right now, that's probably one of the things that's not really as great as The Mandalorian.
Any pastoral concerns or advice for parents who are going to want to watch this with their kids?
Well, one thing, like I mentioned earlier, it does have an emphasis for the character of Boba Fett on rites of passage. He gets adopted into the Tusken Raiders, the Sand People, and I guess like a family sitting down and talking with their kids, it's like you could draw the analogy of baptism, because in baptism you get adopted into God's family. You could make that analogy and talk about it. Now, the thing that you'd also want to probably do is really make sure you draw the distinction between the validity of baptism and pagan practices that involve rites of passage. Because just because you have rites of passage that have some similarities, like even later in life, a person who's baptized could have a confirmation of baptism. Some people might look at that as a rite of passage in terms of, in the cultural sense. But you want to make a distinction between the validity of those things within Christianity and anything that would look similar to that within a pagan context. And this falls into that kind of pagan context. So you'd want to make that distinction. You could make the analogy in reinforcing what is actually going on in terms of baptism, confirmation of baptism, and being an adopted child of God. On the other hand, though, you want to make the distinction to say that having a spirit animal and like going on dream quests and things of that nature, that is not part of what it means to be a Christian, and it's not interchangeable, or, you know, these are not on the same playing field. So that would be something to kind of talk about. I think that the character of Boba Fett, I'd said that he's kind of like a community organizer, or he cares, like he wants to like improve the lives of the people around him. Well, there's nothing particularly wrong with that. In fact, that's very noble and good. So, but the peculiar thing I think for the viewer is they're taking this character who's been a villain and making him into a good guy. And again, that's not particularly bad, except for the fact that sometimes you can just allow the villains to be villains. It's a challenge for a show like this, because do you really want to have a show where the main character is just a miserable villain for the whole entire 7 episodes? Probably not. So you can kind of cheer for the fact that this character is being rehabilitated, but it's a peculiar kind of a thing. I guess if he turns out to be a hero within the Star Wars universe, he might be like one of those 11th hour workers that is being brought into the kingdom, as it were. And maybe if you need to try to like talk about squaring things up with your kids on what is going on with this character that they've gotten to know over time, perhaps this is in the category of repentance. And even villains can have repentance, as it were. So that's all kind of some pastoral things that you could think about, or things you could think about as the father or mother in a family talking to the kids about these characters, or things that maybe they're just watching the movie for the Gamorrean guards and the fights and the other things and kind of like the cool bits. And you might want to draw their attention to some of these themes and elements that are occurring within the first 3 episodes of the show.
Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He is pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. He teaches a course for Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary titled A Lutheran Approach to Art, Media, and Film. Ted, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Elaine Donnelly joins us after this. We're going to talk about a report on extremism in the U.S. military. Is James teaching on faith, works, and justification reconcilable with the rest of Scripture? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January is the new Concordia Commentary on James. It's written by Issues Etc. guest Dr. Curtis Giese. The Concordia Commentary on James is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. The Concordia Commentary on James, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we continue our feasting on Ephesians. With unity of the Spirit, He gave gifts, speaking truth in love, putting on, putting off, and be kind to one another. Join me, Pastor Will Whedon, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand. Listen at thewordendures.org or your favorite podcast provider.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
When Jesus walked with his disciples to Emmaus, they had lost hope. But he opened the scriptures, broke bread, and gave it to them, and they knew him. At Emmaus Lutheran Church in Redmond, Oregon, Jesus repeats this miracle every Sunday. He makes himself known among us in preaching and the sacrament of his body and turns our sorrow to joy. Join us for Divine Service Sundays at 9 and visit our website, www.emmauslcms.org.
Is it possible for the Apostle Paul to teach the doctrine of faith alone without using the words faith alone? Find out in my column in the Latest Issues, Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Katie Price Vogel writes about her journey from the false assurance of works in Roman Catholicism to the true assurance of Jesus' accomplished work in the Lutheran Confession. The free online Issues, Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.